que la ciudad de Portland permitiría un edificio de este tamaño que se construyera sin vivienda accesible.
Our understanding was that this meeting was going to be where we could understand why the city was going to permit this building of this size to be constructed without accessible housing.
También queríamos apoyar a nuestro sindicato que estaba hablando acerca de nuestras preocupaciones.
We also wanted to support our union that was going to be talking about our worries.
Al asistir a la reunión, esperábamos poder enviar un mensaje a los comisionados que nos importa este tema y para que nuestras voces fueran escuchadas.
In attending this meeting, we were hoping to be able to send a message to our commissioners that this subject was important to us and that so our voices would be heard.
Cuando llegamos a la reunión a la una y media, nos dijeron que el proyecto que estaba ahí para hablar no se iba a tratar hasta dentro de dos horas.
When we got to the meeting at 1:30, they told us that the project that they were going to be talking about was not going to be discussed until 2 hours later.
Nos enteramos de que no hablaron sobre el proyecto hasta casi las 8 de la noche, 6 horas más tarde. Nosotros no pudimos quedarnos en la reunión de ese día ya que teníamos que volver a nuestras familias e ir a trabajar esa noche.
We found out that they did not speak about the project until almost 8 p.m. that night, 6 hours later. We could not stay for the meeting that day, and we had to go back to our families and go to work the following night.
El proceso con la comisión de diseño limita injustamente la capacidad de los trabajadores para participar. Si no fuera por el trabajo con mi sindicato en esto, yo no tengo ni idea de cómo mi voz y la voz de otros trabajadores con salarios bajos fueran escuchadas.
The process with this commission design limits unjustly the capacity for the workers to participate. If it weren't for the work with my union in this, I don't have an idea how my voice and the voice of other workers with low income would have been heard.
Si la ciudad va a aprobar proyectos que afectan las opciones de vivienda para los trabajadores de bajos salarios en Portland, entonces el proceso para aprobar esos proyectos se deben de establecer de una manera que los afectados, especialmente aquellos que puedan verse afectados negativamente por la falta de vivienda accesible cerca de donde trabajamos y puedan participar, le pedimos que se incluya la vivienda accesible en este proyecto. Gracias.
If the city is going to approve projects that affect the options of housing for the workers with low incomes in Portland, then the process to approve those projects should be established in a way that the affected, especially those that could see themselves affected negatively for lack of accessible housing close to where they work and could participate. We ask that the accessible housing should be included in this project. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Could you translate for me, please? I am in charge of the bureau that does the design commission.
Estoy encargada es de la comisionada que hace el proyecto de la comisión del diseño.
I'm sorry it was so difficult, and thank you for trying to testify.
Y lo siento que era tan difícil, y gracias por tratar de testificar.
The people on that commission are also citizens, volunteers.
Las personas en ese comisionado también son ciudadanos y voluntarios.
And there are so many applications coming in that they had many, many more meetings and very long meetings to try to get through all of the work.
Y habían tantas aplicaciones que estaban entrando que tenían tantas que estaban tratando de entrar a la reunión y hacer más trabajo.
So it is very difficult, but I'm sorry you had a hard time. Thank you for being here today.
Pero era bien difícil y lo siento que tuvo una tiempo difícil, pero gracias por estar aquí hoy.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Next person.
I show one more person, Felisa Huggins. We kind of had a mix-up on our labels on our testimony sheet, so maybe there's anybody else who is in support.
Anyone else that is going to speak in support of the appeal? Okay. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, members of the commission, for the record, my name is Felisa Huggins. I'm a registered lobbyist at the City of Portland, and I lobby on behalf of SEIU Local 49, which is 10,000 healthcare and property services members. And we, SEIU, is the largest union in the state, representing 65,000 members throughout the state of Oregon. Most of those, like most of the state of Oregon, live in the metro region. And close to the city of Portland. I'm not going to read through my entire testimony. It's been provided to you along with some other information. I'm here to urge the city to deny the Park Avenue West Tower redesign on the basis that it lacks affordable housing and contributes to the growing income divide in our city. We believe that this divide threatens the fabric of who we want to be as a city and the state, the foundation of our sustainability policies that we've been working diligently to move forward. SEA believes that the city has to be inclusive of all of its citizens, and the average Oregon family should have the opportunity to live in the city's core. We believe this has been part of the decisions that the city has made in the past when it comes to the outlook of the aspirations for land use that it's put into its policies. The average family in Oregon earns roughly $43,000, and rising housing costs are pushing these families further from the city core. As you can see from the chart on page 2, most of SEIU 49 members and SEIU 503 members make less than $69,000 a year. And if you look forward through the rest of the maps, you can see that the vast majority of our memberships are moving out of the inner city core. Based on the unaffordability. We know this specifically because over the last 10 years, I've run voter registration information for our members and have actually seen the migration from the inner city districts to the outer edges. I know that many of the councilors here are also familiar with this issue, given their previous history working with other commissions, such as housing, parks, in partnership with the county, and also their work with the schools. The Park Avenue West Tower, currently designed, will not benefit the average Oregonian. Our community as a whole, it is designed primarily to serve the needs of the upper income brackets, and it will draw a further divide in our city. Because the city is part owner, by not providing median income in the downtown housing core, we think that there's an opportunity here. I want to say I understand that we're asking you to do something new. I think that that point's been made and reiterated by each of you. I also understand that some of the goals outlined that the Design Commission believes are aspirational. But I want to be clear that you have an opportunity today to put in place something, to go back and have a discussion, to make your aspirations a reality by denying the appeal. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. Questions for Felisa? Great. Thanks very much.
Hi, my name is Mark Medina, a member of SEIU, Local 49. I just want to say the reasons why I moved to Portland. I came from Los Angeles about just over a year ago. The main reason was because of the idea of Portland. I just went back to LA on vacation, talked to a lot of friends, people who are musicians, artists, graphic designers, have majors in graphic design. They talk about Portland in very glowing terms. They've never been here, but yet for a city they've never been here, they love it. If it wasn't for the fact that the immediate following question after that, how is Portland? How is life up there? And my answer being, it's great. The immediate question is, how is the rent? That's an opportunity cost. Me and several friends up here have been thinking of opening up a bar. nothing that's obviously playing up here, but still. It's a business. It employs people. We're saving up money for it. That's an opportunity cost that would have been lost had I come up here and said, it's not possible to live up here. It's too expensive. It's not feasible. That's something that's benefiting the city of Portland. I'm young, and there's a lot of people that I know that are very young. At some point, we're going to be paying for the Social Security. We're paying for the retirement of a lot of people who are later in their years. You need more people. You need more people to come up here and to sustain this community. It's important to have this city continue to have that same drive that makes people want to come up here, that makes this city be more youthful, support itself. All you have to do is look at Japan right now and see exactly what a society that ages but doesn't help more people want to come to its shores. On top of that, Jeffrey West, a physicist from London, did a great piece in the New York Times where he wrote how living in a city center increases productivity by 15%. And that's been reproduced in economic studies afterwards. It was a fantastic piece. What it shows is living in the city makes people even more productive. The idea of Portland, a bike-friendly city, a city that's supposed to be green and has very progressive roots, is a city that should want people to not look at the city center as an Athens that they can't touch, that you can only visit but can't live in. It's important to want people to come here. It's important to want to keep that idea that Portland is somewhere to come to and to want to be in. I've met a lot of people, I've talked to a lot of people, to a lot of friends, and a lot of other people that I've just seen in the streets. They talk about Portland as a great place to live. I don't see a lot of people rushing to Indianapolis. I don't see a lot of people rushing to Biloxi. I see a lot of people that want to come to Portland. And to continue that, you want to have an environment that's conducive to people that want to move up here. Affordable housing does that. You want to have artists, you want to have entertainers, you want to have graphic design majors, you want to have people with interesting ideas that make this city a place to want to be. And to have that done, you have to have it make it affordable for people that have that drive to come up here, not just people that have done it, have the income, and can afford to live somewhere with higher prices. You want to have a diversity. And to get that, this would be a huge benefit.
That's great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay, anyone else who wants to speak in support of the appeal? Then we'll hear from the applicant, please. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. You too. Okay. And you're going to have to leave if you're here. Okay. Let's see if we can get there.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor Hales. I just want to briefly say that I think one of the worst things that can happen.
Put your name in the record.
Oh,
please.
Sorry. Vanessa Sturgeon, TMT Development. One of the worst things that can happen is that this project stalls again. It's a $175 million project with almost all local vendors, almost all local jobs, and they're union jobs. And so, of course, we saw what it was like for 4 years when Park Avenue West languished, and now I think one of the worst things that can happen is that the project stalls again.
My name is Robert Thompson. I'm a design principal with TVA Architects, a project designer on this project. I think one thing I'd like to do is just talk for a minute about what was brought up earlier as it relates to vision. And I think what's important to understand is in the year 2000, we were underway with the design and development of part of the Fox Tower. And I think what was interesting, I was standing with Mr. Moyer on the corner. And at that point in time, Park Block 5, where Director Park is right now, was slated for an 11-story parking garage. And Mr. Moyer said, you know, we have to find something better for the downtown central city than another parking garage. He stepped up, paid top dollar for that piece of property at his own cost, built the parking garage below grade, donated the park, that piece of property, to the city for a park that would go in perpetuity for the life of the city for the people of the city of Portland. He also bought block four to the north, paid top dollar for that. He also bought the rights to develop those properties as it relates to the allowable FAR that he was entitled to to do that, one of the things that we looked at is what could we give back to create a more livable, viable city center? And in doing that, again, his generosity in terms of transferring and working with the city to transfer the area, the FAR that he purchased, which was up to a 12-to-1 FAR on the Director Park site, over onto Park Block 4, where Park Avenue West is right now, was a very generous move. I understand at this point in time that the city owns the FAR, but I think what's important is that Mr. Moyer paid top dollar for all of that FAR, and out of his own generosity for the people of the city of Portland, donated that to that property to the park, to the city. So this is a view looking at Park Avenue West right now, just so I can introduce the project very quickly to you. And this is a view where Starbucks is looking to the north. So we have Director's Park in front. One of the things that's important is that we want to create a very vibrant, energized, active downtown here. So just going back through the history very quickly on this, there are three towers right here that you see. And Kara talked about this earlier. The one on the left was Park Avenue 1. And in that, we had 33 stories, of which the top 10 floors were very high-end condominiums at that point in time. At that point in time, the Design Commission approved the project unanimously, and we went ahead with construction on it. Unfortunately, as we all know, the economy came, crashed. Mr. Moyer then removed the top 10 floors, took the condominiums out. We converted the project to a 26-story building and went ahead, went back through the design review process, received unanimous approval. Then when the economy stepped up, we came back. What we're asking for is simply what we had originally, and that was the FAR that Mr. Moyer was already given as a part of Park Avenue West 1, so that we could come back and add back in the market rate housing of 15 floors at the bottom of the building. He doesn't have to provide any housing, and I think what's great here is that for us, the richness of this project and our ability to continue to really look at what the core values of what the Central City Plan is trying to do, to be able to bring over 200 market rate housing units back into the heart and the core of the city, we think is makes this project so much richer than it ever was before. And that's what we're really excited about.
Can I just ask you one question?
Yeah.
In that slide, if we go back one. It's not unusual to see the housing above and the office below. According to your diagram, it's the other way around.
Right.
What's the design thinking behind that?
When we were working originally with the prime tenant on the building right now, which is Stoll Reeves, they're taking the top 9 floors of the building. When we were working on Park Avenue West 2, they had those 9 floors. So in order to activate the project, as we know, they are the key tenant that's enabled this project to move forward. They continued, obviously, to want to have the top floors of the building, so we reserved those floors and kept the office portion on the upper 13 floors.
I mean, while we've interrupted you, from a design case standpoint, I'll ask the same question as staff, and when Mr. Noren comes up, I'll ask him in his rebuttal to address this as well. Would it be possible to construct a scenario in which this building were built without housing and still transfer the FAR?
Yes.
By meeting the comp plan policies in some other way?
Yes.
So the fact that the building has housing in it was not in and of itself pivotal to the design case?
No.
In your opinion?
In my opinion, it wasn't. I mean, we could have 100% office on this site, but we chose to bring housing back in because housing, we feel, obviously enriches significantly that district.
Thank you.
And when you gave, when Mr. Moyer gave the park block, was there at that time the agreement that all the FAR that wasn't needed for Director Park would be going to the adjacent building?
Yes. I mean, if you look at Park Block 1, I'm not sure what the legal agreement was. When we did Park Avenue West 1, we had, based on the design, the ability to build 12-to-1 FAR on both blocks. So that's basically 240,000 square feet per block. Park Avenue West 1 is 474,000 square feet. So we, in a sense, used all 100% of the FAR to build Park Avenue West 1 at 474,000, we left 6,000 square feet on where Director Park is in order to cover the square footages of the above-grade elevator pavilions and the restaurant that's there right now.
And I have Director Abate and the city attorney to confirm that later. But my question for you is if the ownership had stayed in the same place, could you have chosen to then just put all of the FAR on one block and leave the other one for a field?
I don't understand the question.
Maybe it's a question for staff. If the ownership stayed in the same ownership with TMT, could you choose to put all of the height and FAR on one block? Mr. Pfeiffer's nodding.
If they got master plan approval.
Right. Subject to the master plan approval.
I see. Thank you.
And that's assuming Mr. Moyer had not agreed to create the park. So in other words, if he had purchased the lot, had not done the park, he
right,
could
that
have.
Was my question.
I'm just making sure I understand. He could have transferred the FAR.
Or even if Tom built the park, he'd still have the excess FAR to transfer. Subject to the master plan approval.
You'll clear that up when you get a chance. That's a question that I think we're just a little confused on, so we're going to need your view on it.
So I'm going to take 5 minutes and just quickly run through the building so you're aware. We know where the site is right here. Again, looking at the site plan here, the Park Avenue West is located on the right-hand side. You can obviously see Director's Park there. I think the beauty of what's going on here with the development of this tower, with the Fox Tower, with the Paramount Hotel to the south, you can see, again, the richness of the retail that's being brought into this district, the restaurants, the theaters, the energy, the public amenity in the form of the park. It's spectacular in terms of what it's doing to help revitalize and energize downtown. The central core of downtown. As we're saying before, the building is 30 stories in height. It's going to consist of a glass curtain wall with a composite aluminum exterior skin, the combination, the aluminum being the light and the glass being the darker blue-green color. This is a view looking at this west elevation to the left and then the Morrison Street elevation to the right. So the building will be very, very vertical, very slender in terms of how it's perceived from the park. And again, we're dealing with a half block here, so the building will actually be perceived as a very, almost a point tower in this character. This is the ground floor I wanted to show you. One of the unique things that we're doing here, much like we did when we designed a Fox Tower, is that we're looking for two floors of retail. Portland traditionally only has single-level retail on most of their developments. So one of the things we're trying to do is get Portland to continue to look for retail opportunities that bring energy and excitement and life, if you will, to the building, to the street and to the central city with this kind of an approach. So what we have here on the lower level of the of these elevations are over 35 feet of vertical height of glass, even taller than what we have on the Fox Tower right now. So this is a view looking at the east side of the elevation where we have our loading or garage entry to the right. And again, that 40-foot podium that creates the base of the building. And again, the view from the Morrison side. So all the way around the podium, the base of this building, it's going to be very transparent, very open. It's going to be very alive, very bright. And again, as I say, bring a lot of energy to the street. This will be the west elevation at the base where we're bringing in the primary entry lobbies to both the apartments and to the office tower. Again, this is a view looking from the Fox Tower looking to the northwest. So to the left, you can see the height of the glass in terms of the scale of the people right there. The Director's Park is to the left. So again, also coming in with a building that's very designed in a way that has a very, very defined retail base, a very defined midsection to the building, and a very defined cap to the building. So this would be a view looking to the northeast. The office lobby and the apartment lobbies would be to the left, if you will. And again, this would be one looking toward the southeast off of Morrison Street. So again, rather than all of the energy simply being toward the park, the nice thing is that we feel this project's going to help spur and continue new growth and development in the Central City District. Again, a view from the other corner. This is a view of the project from the skyline looking from to the west. You can see Nordstrom's in front with a Fox Tower to the left. So it kind of gives you a sense of, or a feel of the scale of the project.
Again, this is just a quick view of looking at the project on the skyline. You can see on the lower one, the project from the left, the tower from the left. It sits to the left of the Fox Tower, is seen off the Vista Bridge. And the one up above, you can see the Fox Tower, and it's just to the right. So I think one of the things that was important to Mr. Moyer in the design of this project is that everything that we did looked to create a new district, a very vital district, bringing retail, bringing life as far as housing back into the central city, and coupling that with office opportunities. So the beauty of this building, it's truly a mixed-use building, which, again, is a unique building type for the city of Portland.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Mr. Thompson? Okay. Steve?
Steve Pfeiffer. I'm a land use attorney here at with Perkins Coie in Portland, 1120 Southway, or Northwest Cooch, 97209. Portland. I'll speak to some of the legal issues and, of course, answer some of the questions that some of which have come up already and some of which may still come up. There's, aside from no small amount of frustration, there's a lot of aspects of this from a simple compliance with applicable land use law that are unusual. First of all, the primary issue before you that's been presented already and was presented to some degree in front of the DRC is a legislative issue. It's not your typical quasi-judicial land use case for two reasons. Number one, it's not a substantial evidence case. We're not arguing about how many trips are generated or those kinds of things. And secondly, we don't seem to be arguing about whether the applicable criteria have been shown to be met by the applicant and now on appeal by the Design Commission. That is typically the focus of a quasi-judicial case. And with some irony that I would note, there's a lot of aspiration attached to this appellant and the related appeal issues, certainly their primary appeal issue. And it's exemplified in many ways, but it's their repeated use of the word what the council should do, not what the council is required or prohibited from doing in this case on appeal or review. It's what you should do. And I'm not saying that the legislative housing mission that they've proposed and the importance of that to this council, the city as a whole, isn't important. But I am going to suggest very clearly that it's not the proper place unless it's embodied in an existing criteria which implements an existing acknowledged comprehensive plan in the same way that the design guidelines and other criteria that are applicable to the Central City Master Plan are in place. It's not a novel thought. It is well established in this case that your review, as was the Commission's, is premised upon whether the applicant has demonstrated with substantial evidence that the criteria have been met, not whether they've met the criteria and then something else, and then some pressing social need or other thing. In fact, the law is very clear that if that demonstration is made, the council, as with every other city council, must grant the permit and approve whatever the pending land use is. The other notable thing about this case, and like many of the ones you see, if you were doing a comp plan amendment or a text amendment, you'd have the statewide planning goals and a wide range of increasingly broad state statutes to comply with. In any case, as you well know, where you're interpreting other than your own code, you're due no deference, and the courts, LUBA included, can substitute their judgment. In other words, you don't have as much authority to interpret. That is not the case as in this instance, virtually all of the criteria that are on the table, the adjustments, the mods, the design reviews, the Central City guidelines, and the master plan criteria are creatures of Title 33. They're creatures, again, of this council's making, and law has been very clear for years now, 20 plus, that you are entitled, both originally by case law, now by statute, to extraordinary deference. You have flexibility. You have significant flexibility on how you interpret phrases. But what I would suggest is, with regard to the key issue before you, which is the affordable housing, the extent to which you could find a criterion with which to link an obligation to require affordable housing, I think your flexibility ends. The language of policy 3C uses the word encourage. That is notable, and LUBA uses that same phrase in the cases we cited when they affirmed, as we have in this case, both your staff and city attorney, that this is an aspirational policy. You're not the only plan in the state with aspirational policies. They are, as Carr pointed out, for guidance. The word encourage is the first thing LUBA points to in the cases we cite as why that is not a mandatory criterion or even a criterion you can use. It's a legislative direction to you. in your programmatic and land use planning. It's appropriate. Now, the question may very well be, and you'll have to resolve it, I would argue, in another day, in another forum, with a much broader conversation, is whether that should be implemented, strike the word encourage, and said affordable housing shall be a component of all new residential development in Central City, and put that on the criteria before the design commission or the hearings officer when they review. That will come before you if this discussion continues. But I don't believe this discussion can do anything more than underscore the point.
Council, this will not be the first hearing that we've allowed great latitude to the parties to make a record. And you've represented some clients that have been given a lot of latitude to make a record, and then we've been reminded at the close of the evidentiary hearing that we have a narrower task. So we appreciate your admonition. But there's still it would be helpful for me just to hear you address what I guess you would call a bootstrap argument of some kind about the nature of the FAR transfer and whether that gives us an additional role either in this hearing or, as my colleague Commissioner Novick suggested, in some other forum.
Well, let me tag on to that. I mean, the heart of the appellant's argument here is that the master plan approval and the city's involvement in that transfer allows us to impose a different standard in this case than from some freestanding design approval that otherwise might be bound by.
And Mary Hales, you used the term that that's a novel argument. I couldn't be that benevolent. I actually think they're posing on to you a very illegal concept that a long range of cases have said you are not free to utilize, which is to make up essentially standards after the fact outside the code and impose them to the applicant's surprise late in the game. There's a consistency requirement that's embodied throughout Oregon land use law, and it's programmatic and site-specific, and you are bound, as we all know, by the criteria in effect.
Does that apply even in a master plan approval?
Absolutely. To every discretionary land use approval, including master plan approvals and comp plan amendments. So I'll leave you with my limited time answering both of those points with 2 points. There are really 2 issues that I see, and you both alluded to them. The number one issue is, what does that policy require of the council and the commission, or even allow? And contrary to what you've heard, I do not believe there is any defensible scenario where you could rely on that clearly aspirational policy, encouraging a range of affordable housing, on this record, as a basis to require, in this case or frankly in any other, and I find it somewhat odd that it hasn't come up yet, but it is here now. You don't have the authority, I would argue, and I think both your staff and your city attorney are saying the same thing, to impose an affordable housing obligation under that criterion. It is applicable. To the extent it's applicable at all, it's an encouragement, and I actually, what Luba would say is it's not even applicable because it's aspirational. So I don't think you can get there on that policy, and there's not a lot more I can add to that. With regard to the covenant, as Carr points out, the process in Portland is well established and frankly very clear. First, you seek an entitlement for the transfer of FAR. In the central city and in the central city alone, you can transfer across a right-of-way. That's what's happened in this case. You ask for the land use authority, and we believe, for the reasons we've noted, contrary to the appellant's arguments, that authority is vested clearly with the design commission. It's always been your interpretation and still is. And again, that's in our written materials. You seek the entitlement. If you seek the entitlement and receive it, then you'll pursue a covenant with the willing buyer and willing seller. If you don't get the entitlement, you're not going to do that. So why, logically, as the code suggests, would you require a covenant to be in place before you even have any indication that you've got the entitlement? 33700060, and it's well established, sub B, as Cara pointed out, has a sentence in it. And the last sentence is, essentially, that the covenant shall be in place before the building permits are issued. That comes long after the entitlement process. So simply put, if this appeal is rejected, the entitlement is affirmed, we have the authority to transfer, it's now incumbent upon us to negotiate a covenant. To the extent the city owns that FAR as opposed to a private party, it's a willing buyer, willing seller transaction. If we don't get it, then we don't get to implement the FAR. The place for you to include any specific compensation, because for whatever reason, be it the location of the park, the sending site, or for other reasons, including affordable housing, is not in the entitlement process where you really don't have that discretion, nor did the commission. But at the time, you negotiate the transfer of the FAR to the extent that the city owns that FAR. But to then go to their next point, and I'll leave it at this, to suggest, well, there's something unique here. You get to read that policy C3 very differently because the FAR is being provided by the city. The equivalent of that would be to say, because the property was purchased from PBOT as remnant right-of-way, we get to turn the code inside and out and read into its standards for review of the subsequent development on that property that is very different because it's got a different basis. I don't think that exists. So the short answer is the code is clear. There is no requirement that the covenant be in place now as a prior to the land use. But if you want the authority, as I believe you have, when you enter into that transaction, that's the time and place to make these considerations.
You could not have been clearer in what you just said, but is that your phone?
Unfortunately. I really thought I had it off.
You could not have been clearer in what you just said. So what is the status of the covenant?
Oh, for the extra, for the last statute of the FAR?
What's the status of that?
And because, the clock's still off. Here's what I can tell you about the FAR. Vanessa was directly involved, and before I forget it, it occurred to me as I walked up here, this project's already been to LUBA once, and one of the issues was the legitimacy of the FAR transfer. Tower number one in 2007 actually went to LUBA, and it was affirmed, to your credit. So this has been debated and dealt with to a lesser degree somewhere else. What happened with the FAR, as I understand it, Vanessa can correct me, and I know Harry's here, too, from the city attorney's office, who was directly involved for parks. Prior to the property being sold, Block 5, to the city, or donated to the city, to parks, there was at least 8.9 FAR that was transferred or severed from that property and retained by Tom Moyer, and that became part of proposal number one. The property was then transferred. And the reason it's a decimal point is because, as one of you, I think, noted in Carr did, there's a building there that needed 0.3. So they kept that much, took the excess. And Tom kept that because he wanted to take that development and increase, for the reasons Bob notes and the application presents, a bigger building on the remainder of Block 4. Then the garage was built. And with that came another, and Carr can correct me if I'm wrong, but with that, I understand, came another 3.0 FAR because of the bike parking. Now, I wasn't involved, and I've heard some people think that FAR that came with the bike parking was still reserved as part of the earlier agreement back to the Moyer, to Marilyn Moyer Trust, to Tom. Harry, I just chatted with, and he's of a mind that 3.0 FAR wasn't reserved kind of in advance and actually may very well still sit with the park property. Either way, whether that remains to that extra FAR that would be transferred under this approval comes from TMT to this project or it comes from the park to this project, I think it absolutely is capable of being transferred. Now, I got to correct myself in response to, I think, your question, or I guess both Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Fish. I, perhaps foolishly off the top, said, if Tom had owned both blocks 4 and 5 and he wanted to transfer the FAR because he'd never donated the park to the city, he could do so through the Central City Master Plan process. Cara points out and reminds me there's a phrase in there that implies pretty clearly, but it's not as direct as it could be, but it's there, that an FAR transfer under a Central City Master Plan needs to be from one ownership to another, not within a single ownership, which would make my answer incorrect, but the whole point, even my incorrect answer, is academic because that's not what happened.
Thank you.
That's what I know, and I know both Vanessa has a perspective, having been there, and I know Harry does too.
So your understanding as of this hearing is it Mr. Moyer or his successors or whatever has at least the 0.9, and there might be a question about the 0.3?
I think the only thing that I at least personally have an open question on, Commissioner, is who might own the 3.0 that is going to be transferred pursuant to this approval. The ownership question just simply means whether Vanessa negotiates with herself or Vanessa negotiates with Parks. But either way, the authorization would be in place if this approval is granted and the appeal is rejected, and the time and place for that covenant to be recorded is not now, and there's no legal deficiency to not have it in place now, but prior to the issuance of the building permit for the component of the building that requires that FAR.
Well, I'm going to need some more clarification from staff, from Kara, and possibly from the city attorney. Harry has something to say, because it sounded like what you just said is that if it's in the same ownership, it can't be transferred by the...
But it's not, so
it's not.
It'd be a moot point. It's Parks ownership. The sending side is Parks. The receiving side is
not
TMT.
If Vanessa's herself.
When I said that, it's what the code means. If the ownership refers to the ownership of the fee interest, which clearly is in Parks. There's no doubt that Parks owns Block 5. The only question might be of whether, as part of that conveyance, there was a reservation back the TMT for the FAR, which is kind of...
I'll get clarification from staff. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, and I believe there was a request that we take a brief break.
I really request that we don't. I have to get to a ribbon cutting.
All right. Can we soldier on?
So we can keep going, but for those of us who need a compassion break, we're just going to walk out for a minute and come back.
If we could do that, I'd really appreciate it.
I don't want to leave if we've got
Commissioner Fritz's clock is ticking to get to another.
So we're going to have staff come up and answer.
I think we have supporters.
We have supporters of the applicant, if any, here.
Yeah, I have two people on the sign-up sheet: Bernie Bottomley and Willie Myers.
Come on up.
Good evening.
Almost.
Almost. Well, we're getting there close. Bernie Bottomley with the Portland Business Alliance, here to speak on behalf of the project. Appreciate the opportunity to be here for a somewhat unique hearing. From my perspective, I don't think I've ever been here for one of these. From the Alliance's perspective, we think this project is one that supports the vitality of downtown, and I think the past approvals of the Design Commission and this council indicate that it is the kind of project that we would like to see in downtown. It stands on its own merit. I think even without the discussion about housing, we would see this as something that the city should approve and should support because of what it does for downtown. It fulfills the kind of vision that downtown has had embodied in it in the 2035 plan, in the CCTMP, in the retail strategy, a whole host of city-adopted strategies that call for this kind of development in downtown and recognize that this is the kind of development that downtown needs to be vital. We're very excited about having the additional housing in downtown. It's something we've advocated for a long time, and our research around the country and up in places like Vancouver, BC, show that having residential development in the city core is something that really vitalizes the neighborhood and supports a lot of other activity, retail and so forth. With respect to the issue of the FAR, I'm no expert on that, so I'm not going to speak to it. But as I say, I would be comfortable arguing that the city should support that FAR. Because of the history of the project and because of what the project is going to do for downtown, and not encumber that discussion. I think, as Mr. Pfeiffer said, I think the rules of the game are clearly in front of you in terms of the appeal, and I think it's without merit. Beyond that, I think the FAR transfer should not be encumbered by the city or leveraged by the city for something other than the benefit of the project itself and the construction of the park, which are huge assets to the city. Finally, I would just say, while I'm very sympathetic to the argument about additional affordable housing, it's an issue. Workforce housing is one that we've argued for consistently over the years. I think we have to sort of recognize the elephant in the room. The only reason that argument's being raised in this forum is because SEIU is angry with TMT development. They wouldn't be here advocating for this issue but for that. And I would hate to see the machinery of a process which is designed to allow the public access to these decisions to be hijacked for a political vendetta and have the city to be a party to a shakedown. We're not New Jersey. Thank you.
Can I just address that point for a second? I've attended a lot of these hearings over the years, and quite frankly, from time to time, my colleagues and I have concluded that the position of the appellant did not have merit. And sometimes it's because a neighborhood group wants to stop a certain kind of development or has a different view. And ultimately, at the end, because we give people broad latitude, we make a decision about what's the applicable law and what our requirement is. And if we're wrong, we're overturned. But I think basically we have a pretty good track record of following the law and doing fact-finding. And generally, I try to be somewhat agnostic about intent. I find in politics, when you get involved in questioning people's motives, it doesn't take you very far positively. And so I accept that people have rights to bring appeals, and we have a function to perform if we think the appeal lacks merit. And I just want to say, and I hope this doesn't become a regular feature of our hearings, I don't find the argument that, as you say in your testimony, this is political and economic extortion helpful to resolving the question that's before us. And I am loath to characterize people, I'm loath to get into the question of motivation. If someone has a legal right to bring an appeal, whether it's an appeal of a police misconduct case, a land use case, or whatever, if they fall within the rules, we are obliged to hear it. I think we have a pretty good track record of sifting through what comes before us. But I'm not sure it's very helpful to make these kinds of characterizations, because I think it tends to inflame the process, and ironically, I think it tends to make it more political. So just my view as a decision maker, I find more persuasive some arguments I've heard that this is beyond our authority, or counsel just previously said this would be the first time this has ever been interpreted in this way. But I think we have a pretty good track record of being able to separate out the issues. And I personally am uncomfortable when we get into imputing motives.
Well, it's not your characterization as mine, so I fully own it. Thank you.
But probably be good not to repeat it. Okay, next.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and commissioners. My name is Willie Myers. I am the current Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbia Pacific Building and Construction Trades Council. We remember when this project was stopped in 2008 and the added chill that it brought to an already spiraling downward economy that into our industry. The construction industry was in a free fall, and we didn't know where the bottom was going to be. Well, we found out. It was the worst recession in U.S. history and in the construction industry since the Great Depression. Unemployment for our members averaged at 35% for 5 years. Some of our locals reached even as high as 60% unemployment. Some of our members were unemployed for more than a year, and some have lost everything that they worked their entire lives to build up, their homes, their marriages, their life savings. The working men and women of the Columbia Pacific Building Trades support this project moving forward. Now's the time to put our members back to work, and our members just want a chance to go back to work, pay their taxes, support their families and their communities. More delays to this project are unnecessary and costly to the citizens of our great city, and we urge you to allow this project to move forward.
Thank you. Questions, reader? Thank you very much. Okay, anyone else?
That's all who signed up.
Then, Mr. Noren, you have an opportunity for rebuttal. Come on up, please.
Mr. Noren, just by way of guidance, this has been a really good discussion. I think both sides have been pretty clear about their positions, so maybe if you could focus on something that you don't think the record is clear on, or that you think we need an additional clarification, but there's no need to rehash any of the arguments that are in the record. I think both sides have done a good job making their cases clear.
Thank you. I'll try and do that. And I do intend this to be rebuttal and not kind of rehashing things. I want to respond to some points from Mr. Pfeiffer. There was an inquiry about could the FAR transfer occur if we weren't doing the deal that we're looking at here. And his initial response was, yes, you can under the master plan. And I made a note, well, no, you can't, because it has to be between different parties. Well, let's leave that aside for now, whether there were different parties, whether there were closely related organizations, and whether that meets the standard for the master plan. The more important point is they get 3.0 FAR for this tower because they're putting housing in. If they don't have housing in this tower, they don't get that 3.0 FAR bonus on Block 4, not Block 5, but Block 4. So without housing, this project doesn't happen. That's part of the reason we're saying to you, you should require, if they're going to get all of this additional height and FAR, then housing is an essential element. They get 3.0 on Block 4 because of their housing. So It wouldn't happen without housing. If you strip it out, they don't get that 3.0 FAR bonus. Mr. Pfeiffer spoke about interpreting this plan provision and that it's never happened before, and he spoke about the idea of consistency. I would submit that we do have an unusual situation here. The concern with consistency can and should be addressed by the unique facts of this case that we've already talked about, that the city has a proprietary role as well as a regulatory role. And finally, I'd like to emphasize, again, this is a land use case. Interpretation of your standards and substantial evidence. This is a substantial evidence case, and this is the single simplest way to deny the application, and that's to say the applicant has not shown that the transfer will occur. And without that FAR transfer, the 30-story building is not allowed in this zone. There has to be substantial evidence that the transfer will occur. By the applicant's argument, if you don't have an owner involved and consent from the owner, evidence that the owner is going to allow it, by the applicant's reasoning, someone could come in and apply for a development on another person's property, get a conditional use approved, not even get the owner's signature, not get any consent from the owner, anything else, get an approval. The owner could show up at the hearing and say, I'm not going to let this happen. I don't want this to happen. The applicant is saying if the application meets the standards, the city would have to approve it. That would leave the owner having to go to LUBA and argue, well, no, I don't want this to happen. This will never happen, LUBA. That doesn't make any sense. If you've got an owner who is not consenting, if you've got a need for proof that the project can happen, as we do here, and there is no proof that the city is going to make that transfer, then you lack substantial evidence for that vital component of this project. And that's the basis for denying this. I think a simpler, legally more defensible basis than your interpretation of the housing policy. And I've addressed both these in my written materials. But this really is a straightforward substantial evidence case. If the city has not consented to the transfer at this point, there's no evidence in the record that transfer is going to occur, and therefore the applicant has not demonstrated that they can meet the FAR requirements.
Okay, great. Questions for Mr. Noren? Thank you very much. Yes. I think we do have some questions for staff, right?
Yes, if I could have park staff, the city attorney, and Kara come up, please. I guess comments on what you've heard so far, and particularly about the transfer of the FAR.
Thank you. I'm Harry Auerbach from City Attorney's Office. I just want to be sure that the council and the record is clear about what the status of the property at Block 5 is and what the status of the FAR respecting Block 5 is. I don't have anything to say about what you can do with it, what they can do with it. That's for BDS, and Catherine can help you on the land use issues, but I can tell you what happened with the property.
What's your name in the record, please?
I'm Harry Auerbach from the City Attorney's Office.
Harry, let me just caution. We don't need the history here. We just, yeah. The question is, what's the status of the
what's
covenant?
What's the current status?
You could go right to that.
I will. First of all, I want to make sure that we're clear. The property right now, Block 5, the city owns the fee subject to TMT's easement for the garage underneath. We have been negotiating about turning it into a condominium, but that has not happened. There is no condominium. We own the fee subject to the easement for the parking garage. Before the Moyer Trust donated the property to the city, Mr. Moyer transferred or withheld the 8.7 FAR of the 9. So in its native state, it had 9 to 1 FAR. 0.3 was reserved for the park improvements. And before we ever got the property, Moyer took the 8.7 off of it. So we got it with the 0.3 FAR. During the course of construction, bonus FARs was earned. By incorporating the teacher fountain, we got a water feature bonus of 0.5 to 1. Sort of ironically, when TMT built the garage and included bicycle lockers, that earned another 2.5 to 1 bonus, but that belongs to the city. So the city, because we own the fee, and they have only an easement. So in the current state, there has been, we consented to the transfer of 8.7 from Fox Tower to West Park Avenue LLC in 2001. That's and as part of the amended land use covenant, consenting to that transfer, the parties, including Ms. Sturgeon, recognized that nothing in this covenant affects any FAR bonus attributable to the construction of the water feature on Park Block 5 or any FAR bonus attributable to the construction of the bicycle lockers under the surface of Park Block 5. The City of Portland will continue to own the bonus FAR attributable to those elements.
So the 8.3 is already gone.
8.7 is gone.
8.7. What's left under discussion is the 3.
What's left under discussion is the 3 bonus FARs, because the 0.3 that otherwise was on the block has to stay there for the improvements that we built as part of the park construction, the restaurant building and such.
And we own that. And
we own that.
Been any, Mike Abate, the director of parks, has there been discussions as far as how that transfer would be made and what consideration we might get for it?
We have not been approached, no.
We have said that Parks has said that it is willing to have those negotiations, but so far nothing has.
8.7 has already been assigned to Mr. Moyer, his
right.
trust,
yes.
or whatever.
Correct.
And so and there may be some discussion in the future about an assignment of something beyond that.
There are 3.0 bonus FARs on Block 5 that Parks does not anticipate it will need for development and therefore is willing to consider transferring, but so far there have been no negotiations about that.
And Kara, that 3 FTE is FAR is needed for the proposal.
Yes, it is.
And usually that would be done at the building permit stage. Sure. So if at the building permit stage they didn't have that, then they would have to do what they already have approved now.
Correct.
So could you respond to Mr. Noren's statement that without housing this project wouldn't happen?
That's not true. The applicant would just need to restructure how they achieve 3-to-1 bonus for the Park Avenue West Tower. They could do it in a variety of ways. There's about 25 different ways in the zoning code, including eco-roofs, bike lockers, art, water feature, retail, which they're doing already, roof gardens. So there's a variety of ways where they could absolutely achieve 3-to-1 if they weren't doing housing and get that 3-to-1 another way.
And could you also respond to the assertion that there has to be evidence in the record that the transfer of FAR is going to occur before the entitlement is granted?
No. I believe 33700060 is very clear that we need that prior to building permit.
Other questions?
I just have to ask one clarifying question. We keep talking about prior to the building permit. Hasn't construction resumed and the building is
right.
being built?
Yes, but we have not permitted this floor area that hasn't been transferred yet. We've only permitted about 10 floors. And the next step would be the 26-story tower, which has the FAR within that 8.7-to-1. So
the third version, Park Avenue West 3?
Needs the additional 3-to-1. Right.
Needs a building permit.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? Then any instructions from the city attorney other than we should be, if we make a decision today, it should be a tentative decision awaiting findings?
That's correct. Just one other thought to throw out to the council. While Kara is clear that the code requires the covenant transferring the FAR before the building permit could be pulled for the additional that's needed, if the council wanted to, the council could also include a condition of approval that simply reiterates what the code requires.
To say that again?
The council could also impose a condition that simply reiterates what the code requires, which is that a covenant for the additional 3-to-1 FAR transfer shall be in place before a building permit is pulled. It's not necessary. The code already says that, but if you wanted to impose that, I believe the applicant would not oppose that.
Okay. All right.
And we would vote on a tentative motion today.
Yes.
Okay. Council discussion before we make a motion?
Please.
I know that there's something you want to cut the ribbon on, Commissioner. I want to see if I can run the clock
in
here.
In 10 minutes in St. John's.
got a helicopter?
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I think this has been a terrific discussion, and if the applicant is willing to accept that condition, I think we should grab it and incorporate it into our action. And while I appreciate the discussion about affordable housing and the creative legal argument, I'm not persuaded that it falls within the scope of our authority for this proceeding. And my inclination is to make a motion to deny the